Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
We have a new champion, a new Grand Slam champion. Her name is Ash Barty of Australia, and it was achieved in the most sensational style. From her point of view, it wasn't dramatic, it wasn't extravagant, but it was absolutely brilliant from start to finish. I'm David Law. This is the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, and I'm joined by Catherine Whittaker in Paris. Catherine, how are you doing?
Doing good, David, doing good. Not as good as Ash Barty.
No.
Who might I remind you, is staying in the McCure, where I find myself right now.
Oh, well, there we go. You've been saying all along the McCure is responsible, and she is a few million
poached
richer.
Eggs. Breakfast of champions, literally.
Yeah, so it seems so. And we've also got Matt Roberts here. Hello, Matt.
Hello, David.
It's not the same, is it? We're in three different places, whereas you were sort of crowded around a media cafe table with some pretty revolting food in front of you, but great company and general atmos. But anyway, we're here virtually on the Tennis Podcast, and that's a great start. The final obviously followed the resumption of the men's semi-final today, and well, it was our worst fears realised, really, wasn't it, in terms of its start time. We had the men coming on court at the appointed time that they'd been given, Novak Djokovic against Dominic Thiem. Let's take it in that order. Although I sort of want to talk about the achievement of Ash Barty as the central point of the podcast, but it feels like the day started where it did and it ended up influencing that women's final. So I feel like we should start there. The match itself, it was again played in fairly high winds, resuming at one set all, 3-1 to Thiem. And then Djokovic came out and he immediately broke serve, Catherine. What was the condition like out there compared to, say, last night when we were talking?
Well, if it hadn't been for what happened yesterday, which was sort of apocalypse-level wind, we'd have been saying, goodness me, today's windy. But actually everyone was saying, oh, the wind's died down a bit, because, you know, it wasn't a total sandstorm out there, but it was still very, very windy. But today Djokovic had the eye of the tiger about it. He'd obviously sort of hypnotized himself overnight into believing that he could fight through the wind, and he just came out absolutely middling it, I thought, and just looking laser focused, absolutely laser focused. I mean, Dominic Thiem did end up winning that third set, but not before being broken back by Djokovic. He took it 7-5, I think, in the end, and then again the laser focus returned at the start of the fourth, and it actually turned into more of a sort of cat and mouse type match tactically than I was expecting. I thought it would just be big, beefy, agricultural Dominic Thiem ground strokes versus the relentless depth and staying power of Novak Djokovic. And it wasn't. It was quite a lot of slicing and dicing for Dominic Thiem. I've been a bit sceptical about his slice in the past, but he's been playing it so much that it is a vastly improved shot. I still think it has a little way to go, but he was drawing Djokovic into the net, and you know, it's tough at the net in windy conditions. And it was, I think, because it started to pay dividends, he sort of stuck with that tactic, and there was a lot more going on, variety and tactics wise, than I was
actually. It's notable that you say that for me. I think we were exchanging messages about that particular slice backhand, and that being an area of concern for him as to whether he needed to really be trying to blast his way through Djokovic, or at least playing really heavy tennis. And there was a moment when Djokovic was coming back at him when it just felt like he'd gone into lockdown mode, and the only way that team was going to be able to beat that Djokovic was playing Stan Wawrinka 2015 final sort of tennis. He got over the line in that third set, as you say, Catherine, Dominic Thiem did. Djokovic then came again. But it, all the way through, Matt, it seemed to me it had that feel of unpredictability. Neither one of them was taking the initiative and then running away and gaining in confidence from being ahead. They just kept on lapsing. Part of that obviously due to their opponent, but I was surprised at Djokovic in that way, that he didn't manage to sustain some of his runs in order to get the job done.
I was too, and he got a bit distracted by a lot of things. I think there are kind of three Djokovic's, I often think. There's kind of peak Djokovic, where he's in a mode, he's relentless, nothing gets in his way, and that's the best version of himself. And then there's the worst Djokovic, where he's emotionless, he's flat, he doesn't react to anything. And this today was Djokovic in the middle, which was everything was affecting him. And sometimes that can bring out his really best tennis, and sometimes it can go the other way. And I think today it slightly tipped the other way, because he came out in lockdown mode, but he lost it and he coughed up some really strange errors at times. But I wanted to say on Thiem's variety and kind of the slice and the drop shots, I mean, if Nick Kyrgios was watching that match, he would have been smiling, because we all heard that interview where he said the way to beat Djokovic is to bring him in and make him uncomfortable. And I'm not sure I quite agree that Kyrgios is some sort of tactical mastermind who's sort of cracked the code on Djokovic based on a couple of wins he had against him. But Thiem did play a much smarter match than I think he would have done a couple of years ago. And I think we did see the kind of new Thiem in that match.
Two elements
today
to that immediately spring to mind. One is that on the match point itself, he actually set up the winning shot with a backhand slice cross court, really deep, floated it over. And Djokovic was really unable to get anything notable on the backhand cross court. And there it was sitting up, and Thiem pulled the trigger, and he landed and he won the match.
I think if you slice well to Djokovic's backhand, he struggles to generate a lot of pace on it. I think Federer's had some success doing that, but Thiem doesn't quite have the slice of Federer, but it's good when he hits it well, and as you said, it sets up his massive forehand.
And it takes me back nearly 20 years to Queens, when Leighton Hewitt was in his absolute pomp, and he was about to go into Wimbledon, and he was winning everything. He'd won the US Open, and I remember Tim Henman and Todd Martin having a conversation in the locker room about how do you beat this guy with an attacking game, because he's the best returner in the world, he's the best lobber in the world, he's the best mover in the world. So how can a serve and volleyer get past him? And Todd Martin had got to the conclusion the way to do it was with what he called junk. We're just trying to give him dolly shots up the middle, not really give him much pace, make him put all the pace on the board. And he actually got quite close, Martin did. And then Henman went against him in the final at Queens, and he said, I thought I'd try it. And he did. He tried this slice and dice game, really not going for anything really at all. And it had sort of marginal success. But ultimately, players with much bigger games and more rounded games, like Federer and Leighton, Nadal, and obviously Djokovic now, were the ones that were too much for Leighton Hewitt back then. But I do find that adapting of his game for Dominic Thiem very, very interesting. But there was another rain delay, Catherine, and there was actually a pretty massive choke from Dominic Thiem. Wasn't he 5-3 up, Matt, at one stage, closing in on victory? And then he lost his serve when he was trying to serve it out. He had two match points, I think, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He had two successive match points at 40-15 and just sort of, choked, basically. He just kept just missed, I think, four shots in a row to just hand the game to Djokovic.
He kept on shaking out his right arm, didn't he? It was very evident, you know, that his arm was leaden and he'd completely tightened up. But there had been he did so well. I mean, yes, that was a moderate mental lapse, but most of the mental ups and downs in that match, even in the resumption today, were from Djokovic. You know, he was given a time warning for the time he was taking on serve by the umpire, and he managed to take a deep breath and keep his cool about it at the time. But then several games later, once he had lost that third set, sat down at the change of ends and gave the umpire, I'm not actually sure who that umpire was. He looked vaguely familiar, but he's not one that I'm not hugely familiar with his back catalogue of work. gave him a right talking to, a really sort of, you know, quite Serena-esque in terms of, you know, who do you think you are? You know, do you, have you ever played tennis? And I thought actually the umpire had that really well. He just said, yes. Yes.
I remember Jim Courier years ago saying, are you just trying to get in the papers? This was 20-odd years ago. And Djokovic kind of gave him one of those. He said, well done, you've made a name for yourself, or something like that.
He did, yeah.
Heat of the moment, I understand. But it's not a great look.
And
it's
he
not
looked
very
like
pleasant.
He was right on the edge at that stage, Djokovic. Yeah. And he took to the court for the fourth set. And I was thinking, you know, sit to pass for Vrinka when we talked about how he seemed emotionally right on the edge, Tsitsipas. And I thought that was the case for Djokovic. And then suddenly he just hunkers down and starts playing just brilliant, relentless, metronomic, focused tennis again. I think, right, okay, he's channeled it all brilliantly, and here he goes. And then the rain comes, and then, oh, good. I mean, I can't even quite remember all of the circus-like events from that fourth and fifth set.
It sort of shows the limitations to that metronomic game on a clay court that's not quick, doesn't it? In as much as a guy with a really destructive game, I mean, I have to say, explosive game that you said to me a few weeks ago, Catherine, and you were right about people like Wawrinka and team and Nadal, people who can just make the ball explode off the surface with extra spin, can ultimately be too much for a player with depth on that surface and just accuracy. You have to have a bit more on your arm. What was it like in the aftermath, Catherine, in the press conference room? Because we've obviously had a lot of chat about what went on with the calling off of the match last night and the extra play, and a lot of people concerned that Djokovic had applied pressure to leave, or he clearly wanted to leave. We saw that when he was on the court. He wasn't enjoying it, and I've seen it many times where players are, you know, trying to get out the door and say, isn't it time we stop now? And I think this has got to stop. This is ridiculous. I've heard all these sort of things from players before to referees and supervisors and so forth. What did Djokovic say when he was questioned about it? And what did team say?
Not an awful lot from either of them. I went to both their press conferences, and also in the intervening period between them, there was a press conference given by Nicolas Massou, Dominic Thiem's coach. And actually, being at those press conferences meant that I missed almost all of the women's final, and as did, I think, most of the journalists, because very understandably, that was a huge story. Their reactions to and their explanations of what went on last night was a huge story. And that, I believe, is a big talking point in terms of, you know, the not before start time of the women's final, which we will get onto. But yes, I was at all three press conferences. Djokovic's first was probably the most dramatic, not necessarily in terms of what he said. I think if you read a transcript, you'd be pretty underwhelmed by it. He gave a lot of credit to team. He was obviously gutted, but, you know, relatively philosophical. Wasn't drawn on anything about last night, just said they were pretty much the worst conditions he'd ever played in, said that he and Dominic were both consulted before a play was called off last night, and he didn't leave the court, didn't leave the stadium, the site before being told that play had been called off. Every question apart from that, he gave pretty short shrift and just said...
He was saying ask the organisers, wasn't he?
Yeah, ask the organisers. He was cutting questions off before the journalist had even got the words out. He was just saying, with a real look in his eye of, I'm not getting into this. This is one of the worst moments of my career. Not getting into that. Just absolutely, he wasn't having any of it. Which I think I was expecting. He marched straight into the press conference room, which he usually does after defeat. So he was extremely raw. He wanted this so badly, so badly. He was going for something utterly extraordinary here. It would have been extraordinary. And it's going to be a tough one to take. And probably in his mind, he lost it due to a number of circumstances outside his control. I mean, whether that's the right interpretation, I think is up for debate, because actually I think a lot of the extraneous factors did their best to help him out. I mean, he played better after every single one of the rain delays. I think there were three in total over the course of the 2 days, and probably with a great deal of assist to Marijn Vida, he came out and played so much better after every single one of them. So I'm not sure there's too much to rue in terms of circumstance for Novak Djokovic, and I think odds are he would still have gone on to lose that match if they'd continued playing right into the glorious evening that we had in Paris yesterday. So, I don't know. Dominic Thiem didn't say much either. He said, look, yeah, we were both consulted. He said, I was all right with it. But then he very quickly moved conversation on to tomorrow. He didn't want to dwell. He wanted to be forward looking. He's not got a lot of time to prepare for this final tomorrow. And he didn't want to spend any of that time dwelling on what happened last night, which you can understand.
Yeah, we'll have a brief preview of that at the end of the show, the final to come tomorrow, the men's singles final. I should say, by the way, I out of the corner of my eye, I've got the doubles final on here, and it is an absolutely packed house on the Suzanne Longlong court. Fantastic atmosphere.
There's French players in it. Isn't there?
Yeah,
it's great.
Jeremy Chardy and Fabrice Martin, who is not a player I've seen before, 6 foot 6 inches tall. They're a set and down and 5 all in the second as I come to you, against Kevin Kravets, who's not a player I think I've seen before, and his partner, Andreas, I really don't know how to say this, Myers, both German, and the crowd are just jumping up and punching the air and loving the atmosphere out there.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As they weren't really in the women's final at the start, because as you said, we had a long delay for rain. And in the end, I think the women's final got onto court an hour and 20 minutes after its scheduled start time. And it was just... it was pretty depressing, really. That was that element of the day, and it was kind of pretty much worst case scenario. It was what we feared might happen. It was a long men's match. It was a great men's match. Then there was a rain delay, and then you've got this stadium just with all the energy sucked out of it, and on come two first time Grand Slam finalists with a bouquet of flowers each, and it just didn't feel right. It didn't feel how it should feel. It ended with a great scene in the end, because Ash Barty was absolutely sensational today. I mean, she barely put her foot wrong. How much of that match did you see, Matt? What was your take on the actual tennis?
Well, I saw it all, and I think it would be fair to say that it was a combination of things that brought about the final scoreline, which was very one-sided in Barty's favour. And the first one was Vondrousova didn't really have much of a fair chance, given that she's 19 years old, her first time even setting foot on Chatrier, the occasion, the uncertainty of the start time. I imagine that really did affect her because she did look quite nervous. I mean, Andre Medvedev said to me in the week, you know, these players are not robots. They do get affected by things, and especially when you're 19. And so it was a shame we didn't see the best version of Vondrousova, but we did see the best version of Ashley Barty, who was superb. I think she, you know, we talked about this being a match of kind of stylish tennis and craft and variety, and she has shown, I think, that she has that in abundance and is better at it than anyone else in the world. It's just such a joy to watch her. And not only her slice backhand, which caused Vondrousova a lot of problems, but her forehand, and particularly her footwork, her willingness to hit the forehand, the topspin forehand, is such a weapon on clay. When you also throw in her serve, she must be the best maximizer of a serve I can ever think of. 5 foot five, but she hits a lot of aces, a lot of power. She's got the kick, and once she got a break in each set, she was able to just control things on her serve.
Yeah, and actually I would say, Catherine, perhaps it's the first player we've seen against Vondrousova who she just doesn't really have an answer against. I mean, that's six sets out of six in their matches that they've played. And I was watching Pat Cash and Annabelle Croft talk about it in your coverage today, about how she would just drift this backhand slice time after time after time into this little quadrant of the court in that backhand corner, or the forehand corner for the left-handed Vondrousova. And she just couldn't deal with it. She couldn't use her own slice against it when it went onto her backhand side and turn it into the drop shots. None of that stuff worked.
Yeah, she's got a brilliant tennis brain, hasn't she? She's just got the perfect tennis brain. I'm just seeing on Twitter, actually, I wonder if this is what I've seen on Twitter is a reminder that Andy Murray in January, it's actually during the Australian Open of January last year, when he'd, of course, flown out there hoping to play, ended up having the first of what's been a couple of surgeries, and then flying home, he did an Ask Andy session, because he was up with jet lag back home in London, and he was asked by one person, which young female tennis player do you think has a brilliant future ahead of her? And where would Ash Barty have been ranked in January of last year? We can look that up, but I think certainly outside the world's top 30, I think. And he replied, Ash Barty. And I suspect it's that tennis brain, that tennis canniness, which is obviously something that Andy Murray has as much, if not more, than anybody else, that I think he sees in her and saw in her then. And that's a heck of a pick. Not that we haven't known about Barty's talent for a long time. You know, she was a junior Grand Slam champion. But I think she's winning junior Grand Slams is a guarantee of absolutely nothing, as we've talked about on recent podcasts. See, I don't know, Ricardis Barrancas or Lechiba Khan, these sorts of people, you know.
She had got inside the top, just about inside the top 20 at the start of 2018, but a year earlier from that, she'd been 300 in the world, because obviously she'd had all that time off. So she'd managed to regroup and get herself back on the circuit and start to move towards it. But in the next year, the next 12 months, she only rose two places. The jump that has taken place this year has been a real coming of age, I think, mentally, emotionally, and in terms of that feeling of belonging. We always talk about imposter syndrome, and I'm sure she's somebody who doesn't have such an inflated view of herself that she just assumed that she belongs at the very top from day one. I think that's something that she's had to get used to.
Yeah, well, again, courtesy of Twitter from Courtney Nguyen, the WTA insider, can I read you a quote from Ash Barty?
Sure.
this time last year, she said, every week on clay is a week closer to grass. A year ago.
That's amazing.
Look, I still think grass is her favourite surface, her best surface, which is mind-boggling because that's where she's going to be next week. And you try telling me she's not the favourite for Wimbledon because she's won Roland Garros and I think she's better on grass.
She's the most equipped player currently at the top, isn't she?
Yeah.
Wow.
And she's the new world number two.
Yeah, Osaka and Barty, 1 and 2 in the world. How cool is that?
Who would possibly have thought that this might happen?
Well, Andy Murray.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, I can think of somebody else as well.
Are we thinking about your moment of clairvoyance, David?
Oh.
Yeah. Funny that. Come on, I've got to have one moment in 7 years where I get something right.
To be fair, it was brilliant.
Hey, we all got a full house yesterday.
Oh, we were amazing. Yeah, basically, in every day, folks, during the French Open, we send out a newsletter every morning. You can get on the list if you want. We'll advertise the link on Twitter. We put our prediction of the day on. And, I mean, honestly, I've come up with I went on about a four-day run of getting everyone wrong. But then last night, or the day before, we made our three predictions. One of them held overnight. I said Vondrousova in two sets. Catherine said team in five sets. And Matt said Nadal in three sets, so we got a full house. So yeah, we are smug, and we're not going to apologise for it.
David's doubly smug, though. Come on, out with it,
today,
David.
Yeah. Well, come on. Saying a month ago that Barty is going to win a Grand Slam this year was, come on, that was quite good.
It was one of our
all-time greats. You see what I'm doing now? I'm trying to take sort of podcast family ownership of that prediction.
I'm actually not too irritated by it because it's offset by the fact that I'm very happy for Ash Barty.
Yeah,
that's kind of the most underhanded backhanded compliments of all time.
I tell you what, that picture of her with the trophy from when she was a kid in 2002, so 17 years ago, she's 23. She would have been 6 years old. The picture of her stood with her tennis racket, clutching a trophy, looking like the cutest, most edible little thing in the world that has just absolutely everybody has tweeted it today. Apparently, she's really not a fan of that photo.
Yeah.
Isn't that hilarious? Poor
but
woman.
She's going to have to learn to be all right with it because it is everywhere, Ash. I wouldn't buy any papers tomorrow if I were you because I think you'll be seeing it a few times.
I don't know whether... I think you might have read the Players Tribune piece with her sisters from maybe a couple of years ago. I read it today just describing what she's like and what they're like as a family. And I don't know, It is a really feel-good story, isn't it? Because Australia has really lapped this up. I mean, she is so them, isn't she? They really get her. It's just a lovely story. And I mean, I agree with you. I think she could move on from here, and her game is so adaptable. If she can do this on clay, my goodness, you know, we might suddenly have a period where she could be world number one, and she probably will be in the not too distant future. And she can be a threat. I won't put it any stronger than that. She can be a threat at every Grand Slam she enters.
Hang on, that's really vague. To say that the world number two is a threat at every Grand Slam she enters, David, that is a redundant comment.
Kerber is not a threat at Roland Garros, is she?
No. Okay. But you know, most of them are. Okay. I'll give you a free pass because of the general brilliance of your Barty predictions. But
thank you.
You've ended on a bum note there, David.
We've just had the most wonderful scene on court Suzanne Longlong with the German pair, Kravets and Mays, actually hitting a winning volley away and both falling simultaneously flat on their backs as they've just won the doubles title. It's a bit of a balloon popper for the stadium because the French pair of Shardy and Martin haven't won. But anyway, a lovely scene. I mean, these guys, one of them's ranked 230 in the world. You know, these are not household names who've just won the doubles title. But brilliant story, Kravets and Mize. I'm going to have to go and look them up a little bit more because I don't know too much about them. The men's singles final tomorrow. Dominic Thiem, he was beaten in straight sets by Rafael Nadal last year. Are we going to get a closer singles final tomorrow? Catherine, go.
I think it's going to be an I'm getting closer moment, and I think he's going to get a set, and I think it's going to be competitive for a little while, and he's going to get closer, but he's not going to get there. Thiem, that is. Nadal is going to get there.
12th Grand Slam singles title at Roland Garros for Rafael Nadal is the prediction of Catherine Whittaker. What about you, Matt?
I agree. I think Nadal in four. I was looking. Thiem has never got more than four games in a set against Nadal at Roland Garros. I think they've played nine sets. But I do think he's a much better player now. But I think Nadal will be too strong. And if he gets to 12, that would put him... His Roland Garros titles alone would be joint fifth on the all-time list.
That's ridiculous.
So he'll have won as many Roland Garros titles as Roy Emerson won Grand Slam titles.
Yeah,
he?
And then the only people ahead of him would be Pete Sampras 14, Djokovic 15, and then Nadal, kind of, we're not really counting him. So then Federer, so fourth. I mean, it's a joke.
Oh, dear. How on earth is this happening? Right. Okay. Is there anything else we've missed? I think we're done for the night. We're going to come back to the men's singles final.
Only to say that I probably would... I do, it's a shame that Dominic Thiem, it would have been the same with Djokovic, of course. It's a shame that he's not got a day of rest the way Nadal has going into the final. I really think that's a massive shame, and it is going to make it less of a final. So maybe
they've got to. I really hope they take stock of this fortnight. I know that they have had weather issues. It's been rough, and if they get a roof next year, they will certainly benefit from it. But I don't want that to just be the answer to all their problems in their minds. I feel that they need to look at this schedule and think it through and actually be prepared to be self-critical, because that's how improvements are made, is you've got to sometimes accept when you've got it wrong. And they've got a number of things wrong this fortnight, and that's certainly one of them.
Yeah, I'll say, yeah, it feels like they're sort of burying their head in the sand and going, but we're going to have a roof next year, it's all going to be fine. Well, you still have to make a lot of scheduling decisions with a roof, and they've made so many howlers this year. Honestly, it's been a shocker. It's been an absolute shocker.
From the point of view of the women's tournament, you have to care about those inequalities in order to change them. Yeah. And they need to have that self-examination and acceptance that, yeah, they need to maybe do something differently. I accept that once you've made the decision, you've got yourself into a tricky position the way they had, and then the weather works against them. It becomes very difficult to get yourself out of it. But don't just say, oh, well, it's not our fault. You know, there's just the circumstances. Go away and self-reflect is my
hope. And just quickly on that point, because I've heard a lot of people saying, oh, well, you know, the players don't mind. They seem really relaxed, you know. It is about the players to a small degree. I do think it, as Matt pointed out very well, I do think it probably was very difficult for them today. But this isn't really, in the wider scheme of things, about the players. Just as a small example, you know, we'd prepared a half-hour show, a half-hour running order, building up to the women's final, entirely dedicated to the women's final, with VT content, with interviews with both finalists to sort of give a bit of background on them, because obviously for the casual tennis viewer, they're not very well known. You know, giving it the proper big up, the proper platform that it deserved. And due to how things panned out today, about 50% of that got canned and fell by the wayside and has never been seen. And that's not right.
Terrible shame.
It's not right.
That's a real shame. Okay, Catherine, you go and rest up. You've got one more day of the French Open to go. Matt, lovely to have you with us, as always, on the Tennis Podcast. We hope you have enjoyed this, our penultimate one of the fortnight. We'll be back again tomorrow after the men's singles final. We'll bring you any other results of note that have taken place as well. We are executive produced by tennisballs.com. Our mascot is Rio with the Y. We're produced in association with The Telegraph, and we'll be back tomorrow. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.